From iAfrican Media, this is iAfrican Bites, a podcast that features commentary on African news, insights, opinions, and analysis with tech industry leaders and professionals. The podcasts are from interviews conducted by the iAfrican team, whether at events or when needed for commentary. I'm Badawun Khosogwane, host and editor-in-chief for iAfrican.com, spelled www.iafrican.com.
When Project ECESA was launched in 2013, it offered free internet service thanks to funding from the city of Tshwane. 600,000 monthly customers were given access to 500 megabytes per day through the project's 1,000 free public Wi-Fi hotspot areas spread throughout the city of Tshwane. Presenting the most recent findings for the Kayamnandi Fiber to Shack Proof of Concept project. Since its inception in 2022 November, the for-profit program has linked 891 households with fiber, and users have used more than 490 terabytes of data on their network. In conversation with Alan Mark Craig, founder of ECESA, he explains the disruption that is Fiber to Shack, how it works, and the risk associated with the new business model. Alan Mark, thank you so much for joining us. Now, 2013, about 10 years ago, Project ECESA started, launched in the capital, Tshwane, as an NGO, primarily to provide Wi-Fi services. You know, at the time, the mayor was our current electricity minister, Hosientso Ramakgopa, right? Reflecting, you know, 10 years ago when you and your team started, would you say Project ECESA was a success?
Firstly, thanks for them, you know, asking me for to do a random interview like this. And yeah, it feels like a lifetime ago. I remember the days I used to sit on a bench under some trees in the botanical gardens here in Stellenbosch. I used to stare at the sky and kind of pray that the municipality would pass. And it was truly a privilege to work with the government. I mean, I got to know Hosientso Ramakgopa quite well. And it really showed what can happen when the government and private sector kind of work together. And in many ways, it's a great success, and it's still going. You know, I can't think of how many hundreds of thousands of people have been impacted by that project. But we definitely took some lessons out of all of that, and I'll never do it again.
Was that so? What lessons were these?
You know, the whole premise of that was that you kind of brought, you know, affordable or free Wi-Fi to within walking distance of everyone. But it was kind of outside internet. But most people are not using the internet outside their homes. They're using it in their homes. Literally, if it's not in their home, they don't use it. So, you know, you're not going to get kids studying outside. You're not going to get people watching movies outside. And it's also dangerous outside. You know, people get mugged, particularly if it's obvious that you're on a smart device. So, you know, that's one of the reasons. Second reason is, you know, we were very focused on wireless as the solution. But the truth is that, you know, it's like the ugly cousin of fiber. I mean, fiber is really that's the real deal. You know, like anybody, and I used to say, no, it's not really different, but it is different. You know, fiber is literally the speed of light. You can't get faster than that. So, and it can handle the kind of congestion that you have in townships. So, yeah, I think that's another reason we wouldn't do it again. And thirdly, I don't think, you know, as soon as you rely on the government to help our country, we're screwed. I was extremely lucky. I didn't realize how lucky we were to be dealing with Sputler and his team there at the time. They were great people. They didn't ask for bribes. They helped us get things done. They paid the bills. We were extremely lucky. In retrospect, it was like a miracle. And it doesn't happen a lot. And even in that situation, when there was a change of regime, you're kind of ending up with new guys, and they've all got their own agendas and stuff like that. So I don't think it's replicatable. I mean, it was hard to ever do it again. And secondly, it's not healthy to rely on the government. In my opinion, all internet infrastructure should be built purely on a profit motive without any government involvement.
So if I'm deriving you well, you're saying the business model was not sustainable through government, you know, government subsidy or government funding.
My opinion, it's just my opinion, of course, and I always reserve the right to change my mind. But I do think of everyone in South Africa that's been trying to do this for the last 20 years, I've made more mistakes than anyone else. I mean, I think the lessons I've learned are real from practice and having paid the price myself. And my opinion is relying on charity or government subsidies or government contracts or anything that is not basically just the consumer paying you is not the path to a totally sustainable project. It's not to say that you can't take charitable contributions, and you can't take government grants, but just your, it mustn't be built around that. You know, you shouldn't, that if that stuff doesn't materialize, it should still be sustainable.
Alan Ott, I love your honesty, and I love the fact that you're giving an on-the-ground analysis and perspective. I think, you know, that's what we really need. Like you said, you know, I just want to touch on the last thing. You know, administrations have changed in the city of Tshwane, you know, ANC-led, coalitions, DA. How has that affected the project up until now thus far?
Well, really what happened there, I think it was 2016 or 2018. When was the municipal elections? Can't remember.
Around 2017, I think 2017. Was it? No, 2019 or something. Yeah, I forgot.
It was like a lifetime ago. And anyway, the ANC at the time was running the show, and then they got booted because basically because Zuma was like, yeah, not the most popular guy in the world. And so even though I think Sputle and his team were, you know, doing a pretty good job in the ANC in Tshwane, I mean, there was like an overall picture that wasn't good for the guys. And then DA came in and it was a bit of a coalition. And then they decided that they didn't want to work with Project Infuse anymore. They'd rather kind of do a, you know, kind of regular tender procurement process, which they did. And I think Altec or Ultron, one of those companies now run it, or somebody like that. So it's still running. It's not done by an NGO. It's now done by a for-profit company. And still some of our former employees work for them, I think. They're still doing the work. So you know, the nice thing is it's still there, working, and there's a legacy. The problem is it hasn't been replicated. You know, like our goal was not just, we thought we were creating an example that the whole country could follow, but nobody followed it. And it's because it does depend on the government buying into it. And I think in our country, we have to just come to terms with the fact that most of the people that are in our government are utterly, shamelessly corrupt. And so it's hard to deal with people that are not thinking about anything other than themselves. Not everyone, but a lot of them. And so instead of trying to find the exceptions to the rule, rather find a model that works regardless of who's in government.
Look, Adelot, I think you're 100% right on the repetition. I mean, right now I'm in the northern parts of the country. I'm in Kimberley. And there's absolutely zero to none public Wi-Fi on this side. And it would have been, you know, the appetite for Wi-Fi is such a strong appetite. I'm literally recording now from the public library. There is no, you know, public Wi-Fi. There's only like 3-4, you know, computer stations, you know, but it's not enough. You know, everybody's got their laptops out on their phones, but there's no public Wi-Fi. And I think the repetition aspect is critical, especially if we're going to get, you know, internet as a universal sort of universal access to the internet. But anyway, let's talk about something more positive. KM Nanda Fiber Projects. Now, you've initialized your proof of concept of fiber to shack project, which is amazing. You know, providing 891 households. You know, I think for 100 megabytes per second, they pay a minimum fee of five rand, which is about 155 rand a month. The cheapest solution by far, you know, when you look at the competitors out there. So let's start from the beginning. What is fiber to shack?
So I think, you know, it's just bullshit, you know, that guys like me, who already have a few advantages in life, also have fiber, and guys that live in townships just down the road, you know, like in Stellenbosch, it's like those are the people that need it more than anyone, and yet, like this digital apartheid thing is actually happening. You know, you've kind of got, you know, most people are black. Most people are poor and black, and the wealthy are mostly not black. But I mean, obviously a big black middle class. It's not really along racial lines anymore. But in terms of class, I mean, if you're in the upper class, you've got unlimited fiber internet. It's cheap. And if you're less money, you don't. So, and actually, if you think about the economics of fiber, as a technology, it was actually designed for highly populated communities. So it's not actually designed for like leafy suburbs. It was designed for Tokyo and for Amsterdam, you know, so we people living on top of one another. And what happened in South Africa is we kind of started with fiber in leafy suburbs, like, you know, where there's like people got like an 800 or you know, 1,000 square meter stand, and connecting them rather than go to the township where for like every 1,000 you need to stand, you get in like a Bryanston, you get like 35 houses with like 5 people living in each house in Kaimandi. So the actual economics, just it actually just makes more sense economically. But the problem has always been just the model, the actual business model around it, because in Western Europe, Japan, Southeast Asia, North America, where fiber is becoming quite kind of pervasive, it's all built around this kind of debit order model. You know, like you pay a monthly fee, off you go. Now, if you looked at the mobile industry 20, you know, just over 20 years ago, you know, 100% of all mobile phones were postpaid, like so contract, you know, you pay a month or 24 months. And if you'd have to ask anybody, you know, who's the market, they would say people who can afford to pay a debit order. That's the market, because that's literally the only customers they have, you know? And it was only when mobile operators introduced prepaid, like a way of paying as you go, that the market size kind of quintuple. It's like 5 or 6 times bigger than it would have been if it has been debit order. So fiber, the global fiber industry is exactly the same place as mobile was 20-25 years ago. You know, it's like if you had to ask fiber people who are their customers, and potentially they're going to say whoever can afford a debit order. Whereas if you think to yourself, well, if my business model didn't require debit order, I could just sell vouchers on a pay as you go basis, then the markets are a lot bigger than that. And we started with that kind of premise in mind. And the long and the short of it is, I mean, we have a solution which is perfect for townships, but it's actually for everyone. You know, the real innovation that I think we're trying to introduce into the market is that if you make fiber available on a pay-as-you-go basis, you're gonna have many more customers and you're gonna have a lot more revenue. But that also means the way you deploy fiber is a bit different. So, you know, the traditional fiber model is you run fiber down the street and then knock on people's doors and people pay an upfront fee and they come in and install and all that stuff. We've had to take a lot more risk than that. You know, when we do what we're doing in Kaimandi is, you know, we're putting fiber into every home, into the home at no cost, with a router, with a UPS, into every home. So like it's pre-installed, you know, we've spent say 5,000 Rand per home. And there's no guarantee we're gonna get any of that money back. And then on top of that, we're selling a 5 Rand for a day. So you know, that's been the hard part, is like kind of getting people to understand that this is gonna work because it's never been tried before. And I think we've kind of reached that point now where we've proven that firstly, it's possible to do it, and secondly, that it's profitable. But you know, dude, I mean, you look like you know what a township looks like, right? And townships are hectic. Townships are hectic, you know. There's mafias, vandalism, there's shack fires and stuff. So infrastructure in townships not for sissies, you know.
Look, Alan, I think you're pioneering into, you know, new grounds, and you're 100% spot on. I think outside of just like township, I think when you look at the world economy, there's so much uncertainty, you know, jobs, you know, we all know what the job situation is in South Africa and just the world at large. Inflation is up. There's not a lot of certainty. So the whole debit order thing is really going to be a problem going into the next, let's say, 10, 15 years. And I think pay-as-you-go is becoming more popular for obvious reasons, you know, and I think you're really onto something. And I love the fact that you're pre-installing. Of course, there's taking a much more appetite of risk, but I think, you know, you're onto something. I think, and I know, and I get the sense that you know that you're onto something.
Dude, it's not impossible that this is going to be a huge disaster. But as one of my former partners used to say, we're on a rocket and we're going to the moon, and it doesn't matter whether we make it or blow up along the way, we'll be among the stars.
Now, is the model still an NGO or is it a for profit? Is it a for profit now?
Shamelessly for profit. Absolutely no NGO or charitable. It's just like we're getting people on the internet. Yeah.
Yeah. Now you touched on some of the hurdles, but now, you know, share more. What are some of the hurdles you face rolling out this project? I mean, taking on all this risk.
There were some technical hurdles. There were some community hurdles. So, for instance, shacks are Faraday cages. A Faraday cage is basically caused by corrugated iron. It creates an electromagnetic shield. It actually bounces wireless waves off it, so you can't kind of like beam, you know, Wi-Fi from a pole nearby through the shack. You've got to put fiber into the shack. Community problems, and you have to get the community buy-in. You can't just roll into a township and say, "Hey, we're here to save you." You need to get the church, the schools, the construction mafias. You know, everyone's kind of. It's not like doing business in Switzerland, you know. But those things we overcame. The big one is electricity. The big one's big time electricity. Unfortunately, you know, it's like classic case of it's a lemon that we're turning into lemonade. You know, when we started this, we didn't think we could actually solve for electricity, but we are actually effectively selling coffee every day. So if there's no electricity, no buy coffee. So we've had to put UPSs in, we're getting our heads around solar distribution. And that's good, because in truth, if we're going to, if let's just say by some miracle, we succeed in Stellenbosch, and then we succeed in Cape Town, and then we succeed in the Free State and Eastern Cape and Northern Cape and all the way north, you know, Toyandu, you know, you still have to, you have to keep succeeding, because you can't just stop at the border. You know, you've got to get Harare sorted. And those countries don't have any electricity. So the fact that Eskom is actually overtly failing right now is actually great, because it's forced us to tackle the electrical problem, which is going to be a problem anyway when we go north of the border.
100%. I like that perspective, you know, looking at the positives and the negatives. Now, how many homes have you connected thus far through KM-Nandi?
891. We've got 891 homes and shacks with fiber, with routers. And I don't know, you know, I'm praying. The more risks I take, the more religious I get, because I need someone to pray to. I'm praying that we got the holocaust money done by December. You know, in some ways, I want to say this, like, it's kind of cheesy to say, but I want people to want to live in Kaimani more than they want to live in Bryanston. You know, like, the internet must be better in Kaimani. Never mind from Umfuleni or Soweto, you know, it's got to be like, just fuck it. This is like the best bloody place in the country to live, because the internet's so fast and so cheap, you know.
And I mean, are you looking at, you know, businesses? You know, there's a lot of spaza shops, there's a lot of, you know, those type of people that are much more, how can I say, easy on the pocket, that can afford it. Are you looking at those guys as well?
We don't discriminate, so it doesn't matter whether you're a gogo or a hairdresser, everyone gets it. But you are right, we actually didn't realize there's an opportunity, like an actual business opportunity, to kind of, from a spaza shop or tavern perspective, kind of think of it as a separate type of customer. But to start with, it's just a blanket layer. Everybody gets a router. And it's kind of, you know, maybe just to explain the user experience, you know, every router gets pre-installed and there's an SSID, a name of the Wi-Fi. It's the same Wi-Fi everywhere. It's called FiberTime, right? So you buy a Vital for FiberTime and you can use it in your home, but if you've still got like 12 hours left and you want to go with your friend, you just, your device is linked. So your device then can jump onto your friend's Wi-Fi at his home or her home. Or the voucher, your time, is linked to your device, not to your device. So wherever your device goes, as long as one of our routers are available, you can use it. So, you know, we're trying to help people feel like they're not being robbed. You know, like this feeling that my data is disappearing, or I'm buying something that I can't use everywhere. We're trying to get away from that and get to this place of trust where, you know, you just know what you're getting. Because the more people trust what we're selling, the more they're going to buy.
You know, and then I like the fact that you said that, because, you know, I'm using a plan and my internet expires. You know, after 30 days, I'm like, but guys, like, I still have an extra gig. Can I get my gig back? Because I paid for it. And why does it expire? Like, and a gig is a lot. You know, that's one day worth of work, you know? So I really like the whole mobility. I like the whole universal access. I like the fact that it goes with your phone. So it has that element. You can share it around with your friends. Also understanding that affordability might be a problem for other people. So let's say, for example, you know, you have a graduate that can sort of buy data for, let's say he's staying in Joburg, for back home in Eastern Cape, and they could sort of use it communally amongst, you know, mom, dad, grandma, cousins, and whatever the case may be. I think it's a very beautiful and interesting model. Now, Alan, before you go, I have to ask you this. There's been a lot of, you know, talk about Starlink, you know, the whole, you know, DA, they said this, ICASA saying that, the minister saying that. What's your take on this whole Starlink thing?
Yeah, I think that our government are a bunch of, I think they're nice. Not all of them. Some of them are absolutely evil people, but most of them are very nice people. I think there's an enormous element of incompetence, and I think there's an enormous level of self-interest and corruption. I don't actually know why our government would stop people. Why would they stop? Like a cheap satellite solution, which is literally the only solution for rural South Africa. You know, it's never going to be fiber. I'm not going to fiber up, you know, villages in the middle of Mpumalanga or Limpopo or Northwest. It's not, why would you stop that? You know, so it's either incompetence or it's corruption. And I don't know, you know, so good luck. That's why I'm not putting satellites in the sky, because that means I need to get the government's permission. So good luck with getting the government's permission. You know, I just stay away anything that requires anybody in the government to help me. You know, we just want to get people on the internet. We just want people who are trying to stop us getting people on the internet. out of the way. And part of the way we get people out of the way is we just don't do stuff that requires government permission. You know, as far as we're concerned, the only real permission we need is a municipality needs to give permission for us to put poles on the ground. And we just go through the process on that. There's nothing dodgy about any of that process. And I think largely because we're like bringing something that's so valuable to a community, like Kaya Money, for instance, like community wants it, you know. Now good luck to the mayor that says to a community, we are not going to let people bring super cheap fast fiber into your community. Good luck with that. That's not going to go well for you. So, I mean, Starlink, I think it's great. I hope those guys get in. I hope the government wakes up and smells the coffee, but you know, I don't care. It's not my business. My business is bringing fiber to town.
100%. 100%, 100%. Alan Knott, thank you so much. It's been such a wonderful conversation. Love your honesty, love your perspective, love your insights. I think what you guys are doing is amazing. I think you're breaking new ground. And I'm of the opinion that, you know, we're going to have a lot more conversations very soon. And I'm looking forward to the growth of, you know, Kaya Mnandi, and hopefully it expands to other townships. You know, there's so many townships in this country. There's Soweto, there's Botshabelo in the Free State, there's Galeshwe in the Northern Cape, Kimberley. There's so many townships with a lot of congested people and that have young professionals working that just need affordable internet, reliable internet.
That's what maybe I should just end by saying, look, about 13 years ago, I woke up one morning and I realized that I'm not going to be able to live in South Africa unless we deal with inequality. You know, I mean, I was probably like, I was what, 33. I mean, it's amazing. It took me 33 years to wake up to the fact that you can't live in a country that's not fair, you know, because it's just not sustainable, you know. And I thought I'm going to try make it less unfair by getting people on the internet, you know. And we did Mixit and we did 20 Wi-Fi and now we're doing CZV and all that. But that's really what it is, man. And, you know, I mean, I really gave up a little bit towards the end of last year around this idea that the government's going to save us. It's not going to save us. We have to save ourselves. And I'm fortunate to be in a position where I've got a little lever that we can, like, my team and I can make a difference. We can try and get people on the internet. But fundamentally, 5 or 6 years from now, we need to know that most South Africans have got unfettered access to information, unfettered access to this podcast, unfettered access to, you know, learning online so they don't have to rely on their teachers, and like jobs, economic growth, you know, so that you can live in Polokwane, for instance, and you can make a living without having to get in a car and drive to Joburg every day.
Thank you so much. Before you leave, you know, we have got a lot of startups that listens to our podcast, so I cannot let you go without, I'm a big fan of your newsletter, by the way. Every morning I read. Even this morning I saw you wrote for Losers, the beginning is always tomorrow. So I want you to share maybe 2-3 minutes of just advising startups, business people in South Africa. The economy is tough with load shedding, petrol prices, everything is just expensive. It's a hard environment now to run a business. So maybe just 2-3 minutes advice for young and small, medium entrepreneurs out there who it's very, very tough. They can't raise money and they need to keep going.
I know. So, okay. So my advice for entrepreneurs is try only take advice from people that have got skin in your game, you know? So like basically, unless someone's going to lose money because of you making a bad decision, you shouldn't be listening to them. I mean, you can maybe like listen a little bit, but you shouldn't actually do what they say. Because at the end of the day, you have to take responsibility for your own life. So whatever I say, just basically just take it as like random noise, because you got to decide for yourself what you want to do with your life. And I come from a very different background from a lot of South Africans. I've got a lot of privilege in my life. I came up from a upper income, middle class family. My dad was a wealthy guy, well, became wealthy, he's famous. So like, I don't want to pretend that this is all the same level playing field. I've got a lot of advantages that a lot of people don't have. But there were some lessons that I took out of my career as an entrepreneur. And they're kind of the top three ones, particularly out of Mixit. You know, my Mixit journey wasn't the most enjoyable journey of my life. And afterwards, I was known for a short while as a weapon of mass financial destruction. So I had some big lessons out of that that I think people need to concentrate on. Well, the first one is you got to be frugal. You know, you got to just, it's obvious, and maybe it's so obvious that people don't need to be reminded of that, but you just don't want to spend money unnecessarily. Right? The second one is you've got to under-promise. It's so tempting when you're in business to kind of sell the dream to the extent that it's like the absolute limit of what you think is possible. The problem with that is if you deliver anything less than that, people don't believe you the next time you say something. So trust and belief and is very important in business. And the only way to build a reputation of being trustworthy is to under-promise. So you have to If you think you're going to make 10 million rand of revenue, tell them you're going to make 8 million rand of revenue. And don't tell them what you think is definitely possible. Just go a little bit under so you've got a bit of wriggle room so you don't miss your promises. And thirdly, you've got to focus. You know, you've got to take all the noise out of your life. You've got to get married to the right person. If you marry the wrong person, quickly get divorced and then marry the right person again. Don't have any noise. Don't be going out on Monday nights, Tuesday nights, Wednesday nights, drinking, drugs, women, men, whatever. Just get that noise out of your life. Don't have any other businesses. Don't have side jaws. Don't do anything like that. Look, just try and concentrate. Don't take debt. Debt will distract you because debt is very stressful. So, you know, try and just get all the noise out of your life. But then ultimately, I mean, you know, and this is my own experience, you know, business is very risky. And even if you stick to all the rules and you follow all the advice, you can just get unlucky and fail. So my own thing is nowadays, I just think about, am I doing something that has a purpose? Am I going to make a difference, or is it just about making money? It must make money. I don't want to be poor, and I don't want to be a burden on anyone else. So the profit motive has to be there. But I want to make a difference first and foremost. So purpose is second. And do I love it? And what is love? Love is actually who you're spending time with, not necessarily what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, everyone has to do stuff they don't enjoy. I don't have to do things. I have to do admin. You know, the stuff that really sucks my energy is not the work. It's people. So walking the path is kind of, everyone's got a struggle, but who you walk the path with, that's a choice you have to make. And if you find yourself on a path with people you don't like spending time with, you need to get off that path or get rid of those people. Because ultimately, if you're not feeling energized and you're not feeling happy and looking forward to work every day, you're not going to be happy and you're not going to be a success.
I don't know, Craig from Project Estizwe, thank you so much. This is African Bites.
Thank you for listening to iAfrican Bites. Please share your feedback with us on our socials. On Twitter at iAfrican. On LinkedIn at iAfrican.com. And check out our other podcasts, The Tefo Mahapi Show, Take Legal Matters, and The Lead Creator, on all podcast streaming platforms. And also make sure to head over to www.iAfrican.com. That is iAfrican.com/radio. And subscribe for notifications. iAfrican Bites is an iAfrican Media original show, produced by Nzalo Mbangana and content producer and host by Don Kotokwane.